Welcome to the Washington Heights Church weekly podcast. We do this to help people feel at home at WHC, where we help people meet and follow Jesus. Thank you for joining us. Well, thanks for joining us today on the Washington Heights Weekly Podcast. And today's guest is what I like to call a friend of Washington Heights, somebody who has been here and somebody who has helped us with some projects along the way. And his name is Jim Tomberlin. And Jim, you want to just let us know who you are, your family, and experiences that you have had.
Well, Roy, it's great to be with you and have this conversation with you today. As you know, I've been a pastor for over four decades. For the last 15 years, I've been a multi-site and church merger consultant. One of my clients several years ago became a place, asked me if I'd step into the chief of staff role. I've been serving that way in the last 3 years at Christ Fellowship in Miami. And so, that's kind of my career ministry path, but my greatest claim to fame is I have 11 grandchildren. I have three grown children, and my eldest daughter and her family actually attended your church when they were stationed.
Right.
When her husband was stationed there at Hill Air Force Base, he flies those little small fast planes, F-16s, and they just so enjoyed their time being at Washington Heights during those years.
Well, we still miss them. They are awesome. And the grandkids they had here were awesome as well. So, Jim, you are one of the pioneers back in the day when something that is now a pretty common term in the church world was unheard of or virtually unheard of, and that's called multi-site. So you were in Colorado Springs, and tell us a little bit about how that came about. And what was the result of that, of becoming a multi-site church?
Well, that's where my journey began as the lead pastor at Woodman Valley Chapel in Colorado Springs, which, by the way, is still my home church and my home base. Hmm. But back in the 90s, mid-90s, is when my journey with multi-site began, when we found ourselves out of room and out of space We had done all we could do to build out, and we had done that, and had gone to several thousand. And what do you do when you're growing and have no more room to expand on? And you're turning people away. So that's where my journey began, and that's where this movement began with mega churches basically that found themselves out of room or restricted by zoning laws. Mm. That quickly, it was a Band-Aid strategy, but it very quickly evolved into a growth strategy for healthy churches of all sizes. We know today the average size of a church that goes multi-site is around 1,000 in attendance. Not a small church, but not a mega church, technically, of 2,000 people or more. But it went from a growth strategy for healthy churches of all sizes to a revitalization strategy for stable or stuck churches. They found that this could be a way for us to re-energize our base and expand our reach beyond the walls of our immediate community. And so many churches like that who were not in trouble, but they were stuck, found this to be a way to break out of that. And then another wave of this movement, it became a rebirth strategy for struggling churches who would merge with a healthy, growing multi-site church. And we know today across the nation is about 320,000 Protestant churches. About 80% of them are in trouble, and they either plateaued or in decline. And that was before COVID. And so because of COVID, many of those churches that were in preservation mode or on life support are not going to survive this season. Mm. Already, matter of fact, almost weekly during these last 4 months, I've been in touch with churches that have begun the merger process or completed the merger process all virtually.
Wow.
Town halls and votes and all that, and recognizing, you know what, we're not going to make it, but we appreciate the church in town here that's been a help to us during this season and all, and we think we can just be better together by joining with you. And as you know, that was the title of my book on church mergers.
Yeah.
But see, that's the movement, and it's not slowing down. the multi-site church movement.
No. And the idea, so a multi-site church, there you were in Colorado Springs, and you're live in person on one campus, and you're on the screen in another campus. And I think to some people, that's kind of a difficult vision to get their arms around about. How does that work? Can you describe, you know, what that experience was like for people? Because maybe there would be some that would say, hey, if you're not there in person, is it really being the church? What would you say to that person?
Well, there were a lot of church leaders that were saying that pre-COVID, they just struggled with the idea of a message being brought by way of a video and by a video screen. But very few people are, very few church leaders are saying that anymore. They see that this can work and it is working. As a matter of fact, I would say that the online church experience was the emerging wave of the multi-site movement, which is really all about taking church to the people. This was an outreach and expanding impact strategy for healthy churches. And so we have clearly, before all this, have become more and more of a screen-oriented culture. And we're comfortable with, you know, phone screens, computer screens. And so it's utilizing the technology that's available to us today to get our message out. And to, if people can't get to our church, how do we take our church to the people? So this is becoming more and more accepted now. And of course, COVID forced hand of all the churches, and they're seeing that this can work. And this really has been a lifeline to keep our church family engaged and connected.
And Jim, you have been currently, and I think in the recent past, heavily involved in an online effort through the church in Miami that you referenced before. And do you want to talk a little bit about what happened there before COVID hit, and then what has happened during the COVID season? And now that they've reopened, as we just have done that, as we record this, it's forcing them to think about some questions. Can you just walk us through that experience that you've had there with the church in Miami?
Well, let me just bring you up to date on our latest decision. We were going to open up 1st of August and have a couple of pre-launch services mid-July. And so I flew back out to Miami a week ago to be part of all that. And by the time I got here, things had shifted, taken a dramatic turn for the worse in terms of the cases and the deaths and all. Right. As you know, Miami's become the epicenter
right.
of the world now for this coronavirus epidemic. And so we've hit pause to an indefinite pause. So we're not reopened, and we're even thinking we may not reopen until the end of the year. Wow. It's a possibility. But so that being said, we have, before COVID, we were a church of about 8,000 people gathered on 17 locations across Miami, 7 across Miami and 11 across, or 10 across South America. And then we had about 7,000 people on our online campus before COVID. So about 15,000 total people we were engaging, either physically or digitally. Since we have gone online exclusive, we've been averaging about 27,000 people every week online. And so we were already a very robust online campus before this happened, and we're grateful for that. But we also provide children, messages or a children's track online, as well as a student's track. And we also have English and Spanish. And so we were ready to do all that when this hit. We were already doing half of that, and now we've completed all that. And so we recognizing we can do this as long as we need to do this.
Wow.
And matter of fact, we see this is the new normal, is that even when we do come back later this year or early next year, we recognize now that the online campus is just as important, if not more important, than our physical campuses. It's moved from being the side door to the church or the back door to the church to the front door of the church. It's now become the main campus. Now isn't our broadcast campus where we were doing the video capture for other campuses, but it's now becoming the online campus. So that's the new day, and I think the churches that will embrace that will get in front of this.
Yeah, and boy, that brings a lot of implications with it. And boy, it sounds so familiar. We've just been having those conversations here ourselves that, you know, it just looks like things are not going back to the way that they were probably ever. And that, you know, doesn't, you know, spell a dark and gloomy future. It just means that we have to shift and adapt to that. And so we're wondering here, too, about how do we emphasize properly the ways that we're reaching people digitally. And during our shutdown, we actually grew in the number of people who were connecting with us. But boy, they were from all over Vermont and Canada, mm-hmm. and all kinds of different places. And, you know, I liken this season back to when I was a kid, and I remember a guy named Billy Graham all of a sudden would go on TV, and people would say, well, that's not real because, you know, he's on TV. And yet there are a lot of people who came to know the Jesus of the Bible by watching mm-hmm. Billy Graham on the TV. Yeah. And it seems like this is almost, you know, a more modern version of that same conversation. And as we shift that paradigm, I think, you know, some folks struggle with that idea that if church is not in person, is it really the church? So can you describe, you mentioned that church in Miami and all those online campuses, is the only thing that they are doing is watching the service that's being broadcast? What else is happening in those communities?
Well, I would say to your point about Billy Graham and others, you know, down through church history, progressive church leaders, those who really were motivated, how do we reach more people? How do we make more disciples? How do we extend the impact of our message? Have always embraced the latest technology to and leverage the latest technology to get our message out. I think about the printing press. The Reformation really was fanned on the wheels of the printing press. And then as we got to automobiles and trains, you know, we could go further and faster. Technology of radio and the television, and then the internet. Now, all those things can be tools for good or for bad, but they can be useful in the right hands for people who have can see this as a way to these are tools that we can leverage to get our message out, and that's what will happen and is happening now, even with this. With this technology that we have now. Your question, I think I diverted from your question. Your question was...
yeah, what's happening in those communities? So
yes.
I think for the person who might say, well, they're just watching the screen and then that's it. Can you talk a little bit more? What is happening in those communities that are remote? You mentioned some in South America. So what is kind of the maybe week's experience for somebody who has joined one of those online communities?
Well, we of course invite people throughout the service online to fill out a connection card, engage with us. We follow up with them. We've had an online campus pastor for several years. Of course, now we have a lot more staff to help him follow up with all those. We work hard to direct them to get into a small group. A virtual small group. We have even before COVID, we had about 80% of our church family in small groups, and so those continued on and actually have been flourishing. And so, you know, the goal of online campus is always to reach people, connect with them there, but the purpose would be to get them connected to other people in their community, and so those are some of the ways that we. Or steps that we take with people who join us online. As I mentioned, we do have a children's online where we bring a children's-oriented presentation and engagement and with activities that they are invited to do, as well as in the student ministries as well. Same thing. They're engaging. And frankly, the student children's ministries and those students and kids are a lot more savvy in a lot of ways on how to really utilize the technology. And so... But absolutely. And then, of course, even during this season, we mobilize all of our campuses to be serving our local communities. And so we invite them to join us. We've been hosting testing. We're testing centers. We're food distribution centers. And so we invite them to join us there, come for help if they need it, or help us serve others.
Hmm. So is it fair to say people are doing remotely the very same thing they were doing if they happened to be in Miami and showed up in the building?
Absolutely. I would say, Roy, and I've heard this from numerous pastors, churches across the country, in a lot of ways we're doing more personal ministry than when we were all meeting physically. Because, you know, you probably have done what we've done. We've all of our campus pastors, you know, our seven here locally and then our ones in South America, they're phone calling everybody in their church database, checking in on them. Mm. We've done that repeatedly. We're having more personal connections and phone calls than we ever were having before. I think there's a lot of good things that in a ministry that's coming out of this time. Mm,
absolutely. So, Jim, I think you've hinted at this a little bit already, but if you had to look down the road, and here we are in the middle of COVID, but one day this, you know, pandemic will be gone, but the results of it, I think, will be lasting. So if you had to predict what online's potential for impact is in the future of helping people to meet the Jesus of the Bible and become followers of his, what does that future look like to you?
Roy, I believe that churches will never see their pre-COVID attendance again. That we will go. I don't think we'll get more than about 50% of what we were had in attendance for a long time, if at all. Maybe except for some special events like Christmas, Easter, things like that. But the other side of the coin, that's kind of the painful news for a lot of us church leaders, that we may not have those full buildings again, but or not for a long, long time. But our reach is actually has multiplied, and we might be actually reaching more people through our online campus that eventually we want to direct to our local campuses or campus. But I think as a result of that, we need to realize when you're preaching in front of your room of 700 seats, and I think you're having about 300 are available to you now in this time of social distancing.
Yep.
So you're speaking to 300 people in the room, but you've got, I don't know, how many are following you online now, about 2,000?
Yeah, it depends on the week, but yeah, it's 1,600, 2,000.
16, yeah. And so this is a really painful realization for a lot of pastors who saw that group in front of them was kind of the main campus and the main focus. But really, that's just a small number of all the people that you are engaging with through your message and through the worship and through that. And so when this began with us in Miami, we had about 125 staff. We realized, what do we want to be? What should we look like a year from now when we're back, able to come back to church and all that sort of thing? What kind of staff positions do we need? What staff positions do we no longer need? How do we continue to have an online experience that does not diminish in quality, but we also have to have a on-site experience that is, we call it the FOMO. What's going to cause people to say, if I don't come to the on-site campus, I might miss out on something. Mm. And so there's to be a value added there. And so how do we do both equally well? In the past, I think it was always about the physical meeting, and then the online was sort of a sideshow. But we used to talk about our church, you know, we were a multi-site church with an online campus. I think the new language in the future will be, we are a digital church with multiple campuses. Hmm. Or an online church. There's a new word actually for this. It's called phygital, which is the combination of we're physical and we are digital. Now, you know, all these trends that we're seeing because of COVID is not because of COVID. It's only being accelerated because of COVID.
Right.
This trend towards online, this trend towards, you know, having access to products, services, church, anytime from anywhere on my schedule was already happening. And the generations behind us, Roy, you know, we're one or two up from the start, from the beginning, from the younger generation.
Is that all? And, it feels like more.
they were already, that trend was already happening with them. And what's happened during this COVID is that a lot of others, the baby boomers and even the builder generation have discovered it's not so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Not so bad.
But change is hard, though, isn't it, for us? A lot of times.
I remember one of our staff wives said, you know, okay, I guess I'm going to have to go online and learn how to give online. And she went and, you know, figured it out. And she said, you know, hey, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a time when everybody sang songs out of a book, right, that was on the back of the pew in front of them. And all of a sudden they went on a screen with a projector. And I can remember, again, as a kid thinking, you know, there were a lot of people who were like, well, it's not the same, right? It's holding that book. And, right, there are changes, and it's easy to react negatively to those. But I think in a day like this, we have to see the opportunities that are there. And God is not stopped by a pandemic, and the church is not shut down because of a pandemic. It is just, you know, a whole different way, you know, of just thinking about it. And we say this a lot, and it seems like we're able to put this theory to the test right now, where we say the church is not the building. And it's easy to say those words, but I think right now we're discovering, no, that's more than a statement. And it might shake us a little bit out of some of the comfort that comes from the routine that we have established. But during the shutdown, you know, just here in our own experience, we've been doing some compassion projects of having people donate things or show up and just bless some people in our community. And the engagement level for that has been significantly high. And I think, you know, that's kind of a little bit of that picture that you were talking about, that there's more personal ministry that can happen through this kind of venue versus coming and hearing and observing and being a part of it. And certainly many people serve there too. But with this, it seems like a lot of people are freed up to actually go and minister personally in the community.
Yes. You know, Roy, I was telling my staff this week that, frankly, going to a church building, it's a great experience and we miss it. But really, it's not a New Testament teaching to go have a the first 300 years of the Christian faith. There were no church buildings to go to because it was illegal. And yet people did gather in homes and in places, not just wherever was a place to gather. That's where, as Jesus said, where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst of them. And so buildings, I've been saying this, to me, one of the outcomes of the multi-site movement was buildings don't reach people. People reach people. Mm. Ministry reaches people. And I think we're seeing this the same as well. What is going to keep people engaged in our culture and in our churches? It's serving them. It's being the church, not going to church. Mm. Now, we know that the scriptures encourage us to gather together, and that's part of our discipleship, is to be in a community of believers and where we worship together. That's part of what it means to follow Jesus. But there are other ways to do that, and this is just one means to an end. I think we become very building-centric in our faith in the last over the 1,000 years of the Christian faith. And we're realizing, you know, we can adapt. And the Christian faith has an incredible ability to adapt to any environment, circumstance, culture, facilities, you know.
Yeah,
it's unique to our faith, I believe.
Well, and as you said, you know, in those early years, the church was born in a time when it was illegal to say that Jesus is Lord, and it thrived, right? So I think we can handle a pandemic if they could handle the Roman Empire and even face torture and, for some, even death. We can figure this one out and move forward. And thank you for speaking that positive voice into this day here. And may we look for the opportunities and not the struggles or the stresses that come along with it. And I know even staff meetings have become so much more stressful in the sense that you have to think about everything that was so routine before. But I believe what's going to be on the other side of that is going to be so many things that we never would have thought of if it had not been for this season. And so
there are
opportunities that are waiting for us, you know, to really recognize what they are, to see God's hand in it and take advantage of them. So thank you for bringing that positive voice. Let me ask you one question that I typically ask, you know, as our time is really winding down here and it's kind of a shift of gears. What is one thing that God has been teaching you recently?
Roy, you know, we are in the midst of a social crisis, in the middle of an economic crisis, on top of the health crisis. and we're about to enter into a divisive election season.
Yeah.
So what a great time to be a follower of Jesus and for the church to shine. I mean, we're made for these kinds of times. If we can keep our focus on the mission of the church, making disciples who make disciples of Jesus, and bringing the good news and good hope of forgiveness and redemption and salvation through Jesus. But, you know, I think this season has been a huge reset for all of us, for the church globally as well, but individually, to really refocus and kind of like a reboot. You know, the very week mid-March when COVID really shut down the whole country and world, that week on my property, a pair of red-tailed hawks flew in and built a nest in the tallest tree on my property behind my house. And my wife and neighborhood has watched these two red-tailed beautiful hawks give birth to three little chicks who've now become little adolescent hawks. We watched them learn to fly, being taught by mom and dad. And now we've got five hawks floating around in my neighborhood. But it's been fascinating to watch them grow. And then, as I think so many, we planted an herb garden and a lot of other flowers, and we get up every day just to see how our plants have done, you know. And before, we never had time for any of that. And it just reminded me of the words from the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus said, "Look how God takes care of the birds of the air, the flowers in the fields. He will take care of you. Have faith. Have faith. Trust in God." Basically, a summary of that, his words there. And so I've just so appreciated that reminder from nature. You know, the birds and the flowers, and, you know, they keep doing what they've always been doing. They're not bothered by all the stuff that bothers us. God takes care of them. He'll take care of us. And I'm reminded of that great hymn, "On Christ the solid rock we stand, all other ground is sinking sand." And so these times remind us how true that is, and how grateful we are as people of faith who have that solid foundation to get through these kind of times.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Jim. Much needed in these days. So, Jim, let me just say thank you one more time for joining us, for sharing your insights. And again, we are thankful for what you've contributed here at Washington Heights, and we look forward to staying in touch with you and recognizing that we're part of a bigger community, and God's at work in many places, right, in Miami, in Colorado Springs, and even in little old Ogden, Utah as well. And our relationship with you has just, you know, shown us in many ways that, you know, we need each other, that we were never created to do this all by ourselves. But there's so much to learn from other people who are following God and can maybe, you know, share with us what they've learned and what, you know, what they're seeing God doing. And we have definitely done that in our relationship with you. So thank you for that. We look forward to that relationship continuing.
Roy, thank you. And for the great ministry you have there in Utah, just appreciate your friendship and the way you've invested in my own kids and grandkids over the years as well. So blessings to you. Press on. Be blessed. Be fruitful and keep multiplying.
That's the plan. Thank you, Jim. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us for the Washington Heights Weekly Podcast. A new podcast we'll post every Monday. We encourage you to check it out, subscribe to it as well. It'll come into your feed automatically. And if you want to share that with somebody that you know that maybe wants to find out a little bit more about Washington Heights, go ahead and share that. And we look forward to hearing from you as well. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.